watching his career and really starting at Houston High School, being able to cover that guy. And then all of a sudden, Matt Cain goes on to become a stud in the major leagues, three-time World Series champion, a three-time All-Star. Check this out. Matt finished his Giants career second all-time among Giants pitchers in the San Francisco era. Remember, they started in New York with 331 starts, third in innings pitched with 2,085 and two-thirds, and third in strikeouts. Unbelievable career. And now he is a member of the 2026 class of the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame. Matt Cain joining us now on Sports 56 Mornings. Hey, Matt.
How's it going?
It's going well. Thank you for joining us, and congratulations on the honor.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate it. It's definitely a huge honor and something that I was very surprised about getting a call about.
Well, well-deserved, certainly. And if I'm not mistaken, did you also not get into the Memphis Sports Hall of Fame maybe in the last few years?
Yeah, over the fall, I got inducted into the Memphis Hall of Fame. So that was amazing to be able to get back and have some family members and friends come out and enjoy that with me and kind of celebrate, you know, everybody that was a part of my career and lifting me, you know, to kind of where I went through baseball.
How many halls of fame are you in now?
I'm not sure exactly. I think there's a few. Yeah,
that's a good thing. Yeah. Well, you've got so many that you don't even remember how many halls of fame. That's when you know you've had a good career.
Yeah, or the memory is just getting bad at 41.
Yes. You're not that old, Matt, but a very, yeah, very modest human being Matt Cain is. But look, it's been an amazing run, and certainly we want to look back at some of those highlights of your career. But for those people out there that haven't heard from you of late, because you've been out of the game for a while, very quiet life. What's going on in Matt Cain's life right now?
Yeah, I've got pretty much two teenage girls, so getting used to one to be in high school and then one getting, you know, closer to going to junior high. They're always keeping me on my toes.
I'm sure.
Yeah, so, you know, they're wonderful, and it's fun watching them blossom and do their thing and trying to learn. I mean, honestly, I'm just really trying to learn how to, you know, grow my faith and figure out how I can lead them as a father, mm-hmm, in what's going on in the world, and just be there for them, and also you know, feeling the needs of what needs to be done, you know, for my wife and myself, just in every other aspect. But yeah, it's just really trying to figure out how to get them prepared, mm-hmm, you know, for their next step.
Are they athletes?
They are. They both ride horses, and so does my wife. They ride horses, and then my little one has gotten into soccer a bunch. So she's kind of adventuring off in a little bit more. So it just kind of depends. But, they've got some athletic ability. It just kind of depends on where they want to go with it.
You didn't get into the horse riding?
I've been into it since I was little. My mom rode.
Really?
So I've got the understanding of riding. I can stay on, but I can't ride.
I wouldn't even be able to stay on, I don't think. So you're way ahead of me.
I did it one time. It wasn't pretty. Let's just say that. Matt Cain joining us on the Sissy's Log Cabin guest line. How often, Matt, do you get back to Memphis?
It was kind of once a year. And then, you know, now that I think the girls are getting a little bit older and their schedule is starting to kind of iron out a little bit, I think try to get back, you know, I'll try to get back usually once a year if I can. It just kind of depends on, you know, how life is going and whatnot. But that needs to be mandatory on my scope, because,
sure,
you know, I've still got a ton of family and everybody there.
I know that one of the sports that you still participate in is golf. I know that you've been an avid golfer. How often you get to play?
You know, I kind of slowed down the last few years. I played a ton when I first retired, and then I almost turned it into a job, and I was wondering why I was so miserable, and it was like, well, I've taken all the fun out of it, which was kind of nice, but then again, I backed off, and so now I really get out, and I don't know, I might get out of, you know, maybe half a dozen times a year or whatnot.
Oh, wow.
And that's totally fine with me, but I just try to pick and choose different times and get out with some good buddies and just enjoy it instead of making it a process.
Do you get out to the ballpark? Do you go to a lot of Giants games? Do you get a chance to go?
No, I really don't. I pay attention enough to be able to hold a conversation like this. And then, you know, having Buster in the front office is kind of challenging because he likes to nag at me to get over there, which is a good thing, though. But it was more of, you know, I know I needed some separation and figuring out, you know, how to get my feet back into the normal world. And then,
right.
You know, how can I benefit, you know, some of the guys? Because that's, you know, baseball has done such an amazing thing in my life. And not just on the sports side, it's, you know, just as growing me as a human. Mm-hmm. So I would love to learn and try to figure out how I can also benefit that for guys. So I guess in all of that, it was more of what I didn't want to do. I didn't want to start talking to some of these guys and then not feel like I was leading them in a good direction. I didn't want to be putting on a front just to say I did it.
Gotcha.
So you never, like, it was never an idea for you to go into coaching or, like you said, Buster's at the front office. You never had any wanting to do any of that?
No, I've never really had a desire to, you know, put on a uniform as a coach. I've always liked the aspect of having maybe a smaller group to be able to connect with and actually get in depth with, but kind of the overall just broad part is not really how I envisioned it. So I've had a couple guys that I've reached out with and tried to stay in contact with and see if I can connect on a, you know, a one-on-one level. Yeah. Or, you know, just trying to feed through them that way, just a little more personal.
Right.
So yeah, just to be able to see if I can feed into them, you know, through the challenges and everything that I went through.
Three-time World Series champion Matt Cain joining us on the program. Before we stroll down memory lane, I did want to get your take on the Giants and Buster going with Tony Vitello, the very successful Tennessee skipper, without any big league experience taking over the Giants. What do you think that'll be like?
You know what? This is where I did a good job of trusting Buster for 7 years when he was there. So I'm just going to put it on him and say, yeah, you know what? He's made a solid decision and I trust him. And, you know, I think time's going to tell, you know, where it's going. And I know there's going to be some good learning curve for Tony. But I mean, in all honesty, like, I mean, yes, baseball is baseball on the field. And it'll be him getting used to, you know, what that speed looks like and whatnot. And then, you know, it's always interesting, and I don't even really understand and didn't have to be a part of, but, you know, everything that has to be done off the field, you know, for the coaching staff is got to be a whole new world. So it'll be interesting to see how he handles that. And it seems to be that Tony's pretty straightforward and open. So, yeah, I think it could be awesome. And it'll be fun to also see maybe some possible comments that he comes up with.
Along the line of managers, what was it that made Bruce Bochy such a great manager?
I thought he did an amazing job, and I'm really hoping I got it right because I'm pretty sure he comes from a military background, family-wise. But he just did such an amazing job of strategizing, and I thought, and that's what I always respected about Bochy. I ended up hating it at the end when I wasn't able to be a part of the strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where I had to learn as a teammate and, you know, as a part of my career is that, hey, like, Boch is there to figure out how to manage and how to get the team, you know, to the finish line the best he can. So he's going to use the pieces that he has, you know, to his best ability. And that's really what I enjoyed. I enjoyed the fact that he didn't, and that was before it, but he didn't over, you know, get into the analytics of it, and he didn't also take everybody's advice. He went from, you know, what his gut showed him or felt like he was going to need to do in high pressure situations, and he went with it. And he wasn't afraid to answer, I got it wrong. And luckily he was able to say and prove that he got it right, you know, now four times with two different teams.
From the outside looking in, watching you throughout your career, but watching you specifically do what you did on June 13th, 2012, when you threw the perfect game against the Astros. You became the 22nd pitcher to throw a perfect game in Major League Baseball history. Struck out a career-high 14, which tied Sandy Koufax for the most strikeouts in a perfect game. Like I said, you seem so calm, cool, and collected. What was it like on the bump as you got closer and closer to immortality?
I think that was that was the nice part about that night for me, was the fact that I really was out of my own way in what was going on. I knew that I hadn't given up a hit, but I was able to stay out of my own way mentally, and I was able to just kind of let the physical part just take over. And that's where, you know, for 125 pitches, I never shook Buster off. And, you know,
wow.
For I think a couple 3-2 counts, we threw changeups, you know, which it was like, really, this is what we're doing when I look back at it now. But, you know, that's the amazing part about seeing if we can get out of our own way, mm-hmm. ways as humans, is we can complete a lot of things that way. And it was just amazing for everybody that night to come together. And, you know, somebody asked me actually the other day on the golf course, was like, hey, you know, how do you compare, what would you compare about, you know, the World Series wins or the perfect game? And I was like, they're almost exactly similar. I know that I get all of the credit and whatnot that happened in the perfect game, but everybody on the team, the same in the World Series or the postseason, like, we all had such a focused mission to find a way to make, you know, that game that night possible.
Yeah.
You know, so everybody that stepped on the field was completely energized. And, you know, when you go back and look at, you know, the video and you hear the crowd, the noise, like, they're almost identical. And it's just, it's phenomenal to be able to be a part of that. And I appreciate the guys being able to be locked in that night.
While it was going on, was everybody else, you said you stayed out your way, was everybody leaving you alone? Like, what is that atmosphere of the dugout as that's unfolding?
Yeah, you know, and I'm almost, I'd always had a pretty good ability of kind of focusing or kind of zoning everything out. So, like, the noise usually doesn't bother me, but I guess the best one, nothing interaction-wise happened at all, like, with somebody on accident, but Brandon Belt, being Brandon Belt, did sit in the seat that I sit in every start. It's obvious there's a towel, you know. Rigetti makes it obvious that, like, hey, this is where the pitcher's going to sit. And Belt, like, sits right there on the towel, right in the middle. And literally the entire dugout, like, almost killed it. You know, but that is Brandon Belt to a T. And, you know, he is so harmless and just beautiful that, like, you're just like, but it's just Brandon being Brandon. So it's perfect.
So was he screwing around with you, or did he accidentally just sit there?
He just was so oblivious. He was so oblivious. That is why he is so great. Like, he's just like, oh, wait, oh, okay, this is what's going on. Cool. All right, I'll move.
That is unreal. Let me ask you this, because you read about you on Wikipedia, and, you know, with Wikipedia, some things are maybe not true. Were you presented the key to the city? Did they recognize June 13th as Matt Cain Day every June 13th in San Francisco?
Somehow they do, but somehow, like, I just really can't take advantage of that one. I haven't figured out, like, what this key is all about, but, yes.
It's got to open something, Matt. It's got to open
something. Right?
Just walking around town trying locks. That's it. Just keep trying locks until you figure it out.
Yeah, can I get into San Francisco Club with that? Or like what?
Right.
You, obviously, the perfect game, certainly you remember the thing about. There was a ton of postseason starts. You had a ton of postseason success, and you guys won the world championships. Is there one, like, from your postseason memories, are those vivid, like, every single start, or are certain starts that you remember vividly from the postseasons?
The one that actually really stands out to me is the 2012 one, the second start against the Reds. And how absolutely terrified I was. The Reds had always given me a fit, and it's just like, man, I was like so bound up and just so tense that I'm just like, how am I going to actually go out there and compete and go do this? You know, and you know, it's obviously worse as you know, being an athlete or, you know, really anything. It's like the lead up is the worst. You know, so. probably not really getting a whole lot of sleep the night before, and just knowing that, hey, you know, putting this on my shoulders, you know, putting a lot of extra pressure on my shoulders. But like, it was like that game, and then all of a sudden they decide to score, you know, 8 runs in the top of the fifth. I'm actually like, you guys actually jammed me up worse now, because now I'm going to be a big giant loser if I tank this. You know, so it was like, it was almost better when we were 0-0,
yeah.
Because I knew that the pressure was there and I couldn't relax. So it was, it was such a mental game. And that part of the year is such a mental game because, you know, you're physically gone. But you just have to let it, you just have to let your body do its thing. And like I was saying earlier, like, try not to get in your own way and let, you know, let what happened is going to happen.
I know how the fans feel and how I personally feel about your guys' run. Did you guys think that once you won the third World Series, now you've had 3 in even years, what, 12, 14, 16, if I'm not mistaken, did you feel like you were a dynasty?
No, I don't think anybody, not that I know of.
Okay.
I mean, I knew that, we knew that we actually had a good run going on and we wanted it to keep going. So I don't know if guys really overly thought about that, but I couldn't say so.
Yeah, I think fans and myself, even we consider that because it was just a, you know, total domination on the even years, which was weird.
Right. I mean, as a kid, like when I think of just an absolute dynasty is, you know, is obviously what Jordan did. Like that.
Yeah. Right.
I guess
right.
that really holds the bar. So pretty much everybody's going to come up short.
True.
When you were starting a game, when you were doing your warm-up before the game, you talk about nerves and think about stuff with the lead-up, all that. Could you tell whether you were going to have a good game or not? Like, were there times where you're like, this doesn't feel right, but you still went out and pitched well? Like, how was it? Because as a golfer, you think people talk about it from the range to the course is completely different all the time. But for you as a pitcher warming up versus the game, could you tell while you were warming up what kind of night it was going to be?
I could only, you know what, over the years, I learned to be able to use the bullpen as, hey, I just need to make sure I can throw the ball towards the plate, and figure that part out. But overall, like being able to say, hey, you know what, like tonight's about to be nasty. No, because I think I'd had too many games in the minor leagues and even early on that you're just like, oh, they better watch out. And then being like, oh, that was cool. I pitched 2 innings. Like, never mind. So I tried to never really gauge it off of that. I think what I did do, though, is if there were things in the bullpen, I would just be like, hey, you know what? Like, I've got a feeling. I've got a good live fastball. Let's take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, like, being able to know, like, hey, I think I had to give the game way more respect, because it can humble you so fast. So I would try not to ever do that.
A few more minutes with 3-time World Series champion Matt Cain joining us on the program. We'll be part of the class of 2026, the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame induction class. Another highlight, I'm sure, of your career, being named to the All-Star team 3 times, but specifically being a starter for Tony La Russa in the game in 2000. Was that 2012, I think? In Kansas City, you start the game, you get the win, you give up the hit to Jeter to start, and then you retire the next 6. What was that like, again, to take the bump, starting pitcher, all-star game?
I know, I'm still mad at Furcal for not making that play. I mean, he's supposed to be an all-star, and I'm still a little bitter about that one, because I'm pretty sure I saw him make that play a ton of times when he was with L.A., but, you know, I'm not holding anything. So it was, you know, to get the nod from Tony, because obviously, you know, you respect that man so much from playing across him and watching him do everything that he's done as a manager. And to be able to get the nod from him is a great honor, and I appreciate him trusting me with the ball that night and being able to hand that over, because, you know, that's one of those things that, you know, that very easily could have been to, and I am blanking on. I am blanking on his name. Who won the Cy Young that year with the knuckleball with New York?
Oh, was that Wakefield was Boston?
No, not Wakefield. But you know, it very easily could have gone. He very could have easily and probably well deserved could have given that numbers wise to him. But for some reason he felt that, you know, I was, you know, the one that could take the ball that day. It was R.A. Dickey.
R.A. Dickey.
Yep. And so, like, I didn't want to take it lightly, and I didn't want to go out there and just, you know, do whatever. So I approached it like another start. And I don't know, that might have taken a little bit of fun out of the All-Star game, but, you know, I just didn't want to take it lightly. And I appreciated every bit of it because in 09, you know, I wasn't able to pitch. In 11, I wasn't able to pitch because I had pitched 2 days before. So on the rest program, right, they didn't want us to pitch. So being able to actually participate in the All-Star game, I really loved it, and I cherish that one for sure.
Yeah, and you got the dub.
And yes, right. Yeah, and that was even cooler too, because I don't know how it works in the All-Star game.
Yeah.
But, you know, he sent me back out there because I was expecting just to throw one inning, and he's like, "Hey, go back out," and I'm like, "Oh, okay." And so I think he might have to pitch two innings, you know, or something of that sort to be able to get the nod for the. And I don't know how it works, but you know, I think he was trying to set me up a little bit to also help me out in that part. So it was just, you know, the same thing as like with Boach. They're thinking on a different level, and they get this big picture above the game.
That's great.
Two current things of baseball that I want to know whether you would like to still be playing. One, the DH in the National League. So would you like to be playing where you wouldn't hit at all?
That's sad. No, it's sad.
Yeah, how many home runs did you hit? You hit a half dozen home runs, didn't you?
I had a don't cut me short.
Uh-oh.
I had seven.
Seven, okay. I missed that seven, though.
And then
there you go.
The challenge system coming in this year, would you have liked that?
I probably would, but I'd probably abuse it and not know.
You'd use up the challenges immediately. My gosh, we're out of challenges. Because
right.
Matt used them all in the first.
I'm all done. Because, how are they doing it? How many are they doing? I think it would be nice. But then again, like, I don't know. I'm kind of borderline on it. I'm a little borderline on it for the fact of, like, there's a lot to be said about the human element of the game.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I would obviously want it when it is, you know, out there. But then again, there's something that you have to learn as being, you know, an athlete, you know, on both sides of it is like, hey, sometimes the guys behind the plate, the umpires, you know, they're having challenging times. That's the zone that they see. And, you know, you have to play in that field. So it's just part of it. So yes and no, I guess.
Yeah, they get two challenges, but if it's a successful challenge, you keep it. So you basically get two missed challenges for the game and for both sides, either the hitter or the pitcher and catcher to use those. Did you feel like you knew the strike zone really well? Like when an umpire missed a call, like you're like, no, he absolutely missed that call.
For the most part, you know, because sometimes I was out there begging, just hoping for the extra corner. you know, everybody would have loved that Greg Maddux strike zone.
Yes.
But, you know, I think the ones that are blatant, that's where it's like, all right, I don't really get it. Mm-hmm. You know, when, you know, at least for us, I'm not sure exactly how the catchers lay down behind the plate now. You know, with the guys that set up on the outside and you miss on the inside third and they wouldn't call it. And you're like, I mean, seriously, that went right over the plate. Like, that's, you know, the way that I was, you know, the way that, you know, we watched baseball as kids. It was, you know, hey, okay, well, yeah, but you didn't, you know, throw where you're supposed to, so I'm not going to give it to you. And that was a little bit of respect of having to earn it.
He is the three-time World Series champion, the three-time All-Star, Matt Cain from Houston High School and the San Francisco Giants. What a career, and now headed to the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame. Matt, an absolute pleasure having you on the program. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it, guys. It was a good time.
You take care.